Welcome to An Epiphany with Tiffany. My name is Tiffany, and I've just had an epiphany. This podcast is all about Christian singles looking for community. Christian dating can be quite a mess these days. I'll share stories from my guests and practical tips for successful love. Dating shouldn't be this hard, right? So grab your favorite snack or drink and curl up with this episode, and you might just have an epiphany of your own.
I've been in the dating realm and thinking about, you know, emotionally healthy relationships and God-honoring relationships for a while, so I'm passionate about many of these things.
Okay, actually, if you don't mind starting here, because I really liked what you said about politically aligning with somebody, and it's a very different perspective than I've gotten so far. So do you want someone to align politically with you?
You know, I've had some challenging experiences in the past with dating men across the political spectrum. Mm. And what I've recognized as I've grown and matured in my Christian faith is that I really want someone who recognizes that as Christians, we are citizens of heaven first and foremost, and we are temporarily on this earth, and that, you know, as I spend time overseas encountering other cultures and living among other peoples and doing mission work, God is drawing people from all nations and languages to himself to be around his throne in heaven. And so if we are living lives on a kingdom purpose for God with an eternal perspective, then the earthly rulers of this life are, you know, a necessity and a required part of living, but they don't hold ultimate power over our ability to have joy in life. And so I vote, and I'd like my husband to vote, and we should fulfill our civic duty, but I don't really want voting or discussing politics to be any more than one day on the calendar. And I want our focus and our marriage and our relationship to be more on eternity and God's kingdom and how we can live out his purposes here on earth.
Yeah. And that's awesome. I am like, that's such a great perspective.
You know, I wish more guys had the perspective. Maybe I wouldn't be single.
I mean, I get that. As somebody who sometimes gets wrapped up in the political stuff, like reading that was like, oh, okay. That's a little convicting, you know, and maybe yet again, we're putting too much emphasis on things of this world and not so much on what the overall purpose of us being here is. So yeah, I loved that though. It definitely gave me a little bit of a perspective shift. And so I don't know if this is something that you don't want to share. So if it is, I will cut this part out. But are you like in full-time missions or?
I'm not in full-time missions, but again, I feel like all followers of Jesus are called to share the gospel. Mm-hmm. And so for instance, I recently purchased a home and I'm meeting my neighbors, and I have a fish pond out front, and this woman and her daughter came up and, you know, wanted to see my fish. The daughter's like 2 or 2.5. Uh-huh. And we just were having casual conversation, and she brought up church. Maybe I did ask her where she goes to church, but we started a church conversation, and it turns out she grew up in one denomination in evangelism, and he was is Jewish. And so they've not come to a church where they feel comfortable with both of them attending. So we just had a very natural conversation of, you know, what does it look like to be a Christ follower in this dynamic of one is Jewish, one is Christian? The churches don't necessarily understand Judaism, you know, so that wasn't a mission setting at all, but it's still a conversation that we should be equipped to have as Christ followers. I'm not going to disclose exactly my work, but I am in the medical public health field. And so as a part of that, I do travel overseas, both for work related purposes, but also for missions purposes. And I'm very grateful that I have those opportunities to do mission work in short-term capacity, usually, although I have lived overseas for longer-term times in Africa. Mm-hmm. But I feel like, you know, when you're in the bubble of the U.S., you don't recognize that there's a bubble. Like, you don't recognize that there's anything outside of that bubble. And same, you know, if somebody was in Korea and never left, or in Uganda and never left, or in Brazil and never left, you know, that is the bubble that they know. But as soon as you leave and experience life in a different setting, you realize that, you know, the politics of Uganda are just as complicated as the politics of the US, and the politics of Costa Rica and Peru are just as complicated as the politics of Europe. And so it doesn't have to be defining of who we are. You know, we should be living as Christians in whatever setting. One of my favorite verses is Acts 17, where Paul's talking in Athens, and he says, you know, God has ordained the times and places for man to live, that they should have their being and search and find him, something along those lines. It's my paraphrase. But, you know, God knew that we'd be living in the U.S. and he knew that those other people would be living in whatever country he has them living in. So he knows the struggles and the challenges that we face, but he's not incapable of helping us address them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, it totally makes sense. And it makes me think of like the debate of, you know, there are some people who are like, I'm not paying taxes. And then you look at the verse and it's like, it talks about render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and so then when we get stuck into those things, I feel like it's some of those things, I guess, that are secondary issues. They're not salvation issues, right? But they can be such a division causing thing. And it's just like, it doesn't have to be that way, guys. Like, we don't have to focus so much on all that stuff. The main focus should be, what are we doing for the kingdom? And how are we presenting ourselves as Christ-like?
Right. So, yeah. Yep.
Okay. I don't know if I know who Tim Keller is.
Ooh. May I introduce you to Tim Keller?
Yes, because I saw that earlier and I was like, who's Tim Keller? And I didn't have a second to like look him up to see if I actually know who he is for sure, because the name's not ringing any bells. So okay. By all means.
Okay. So Tim Keller passed away this year from pancreatic cancer. And I have not had a chance to watch his memorial service, but I understand that it was very, very touching. But he was the senior pastor at Redeemer Presbyterian Church in New York City. Okay. And so he planted that church. And, you know, people think of New York as a very secular city, not at all interested in Christianity or religion. But it was a huge, huge mega church, and he had a huge ministry. A large number of singles were at that church because New York, you know, is a very transient single city. And his sermons are available on podcast. And if you have a chance to listen to them, you know, I listened to one recently about sexuality and singleness and a 1 Corinthians passage from Paul. And he just has a very well-grounded, theologically sound perspective on what it looks like to live single for the gospel and to have a desire for the good thing of marriage and, you know, partnership and family, but to also recognize that, you know, Paul said, if you're single, stay single. If you're married, stay married. You know, like there's, again, that eternal perspective of, if we are in this in-between of Jesus already came and he's not yet come again, and, you know, we know that there's going to be another coming and we have work to do, but before then, mm-hmm. you know, Paul says there's going to be trouble and hardship in marriage. So, you know, stay single. But Tim Keller wrote the book, The Meaning of Marriage, and based on his sermon series. And so it's a fairly popular book for people interested in getting married. And I took that course from my church a few months ago. And, you know, again, he just has a good biblical view on what it looks like to honor each other, honor spouses, honor God in the marriage relationship. So when he said, within the Christian vision of marriage, here's what it means to fall in love, is to look at another person and get a glimpse of what God is creating and say, I see who God is making you and it excites me. I want to be a part of that. I want to partner with you and God in the journey you are taking to his throne. And when we get there, I will look at your magnificence and say, I always knew you could be like this. I got glimpses of it on earth, but now look at you. And that just really sums up, you know, what I'm looking for. I'm looking for someone who, you know, we are being sanctified and we won't be perfect until eternity, until we meet Jesus. But that sanctification that takes place in a marriage relationship, you know, is hard work, and it requires the steadfastness and the long suffering and longevity of a partner who is patient and kind and loving and self-controlled and exhibits all the fruits of the Spirit. And so if you can see beyond the person standing in front of you and see the Holy Spirit and, you know, the aspects of Jesus in them and call those forth into existence more and more each day in partnership with Jesus. He relates it to chiseling marble. So you find a good piece of marble and then you and God, you know, you chisel it together and you know, you become this beautiful piece of artwork together. And I, my grandmother just died, and my grandparents were married for 68 years and together for longer than that. And it was a beautiful example of exactly this, where, you know, at the time of her death, he was right there at her bedside, and he essentially was, you know, finishing the task of walking her to Jesus's throne, and having spent over, you know, almost seven decades together, having built this life of, they were the most unified couple I had ever witnessed. They had grown together so much through their worship and their just love for God together. Mm-hmm. They were one. So even at the time of death, like, they were together when she died. And yeah, it's just a beautiful quote that Tim Keller had in his book, and a beautiful picture.
Yeah. I'm very sorry for your loss. But that was like a very beautiful representation. And now I want to go read his book and listen to his sermons. Just wow. Like, I'm still trying to process all of that. like, I feel like that's what we all should want. And there are a couple of things that made me think of some of the other conversations I've had so far. And like, with the idea of getting too wrapped up in the external and like the influences from the outside world. And one of the conversations I had already was about how, again, we get too focused on the outside stuff, and then we forget that person, whether we're interested in them or not, or you know, whatever, like, they're still made in the image of God. And like, sometimes we don't like think about it that way. We're just like, oh, I'm not interested, or I was interested, but they're not interested in me. And so you have all this conflict, right? And, you know,
I mean, unless it's a safety situation, I usually approach dating as, you know, first and foremost, you're my brother in Christ. And yes, how can I edify and honor you in this relationship? You know, I want your best interest. And if your best interest is not us being together, then, you know, I freely release you. And honestly, that's what happened in my last dating relationship. Is, he was a wonderful man, but he was not, you know, God made it abundantly clear that he was not the right man for me. And so I loved him. And in the course of loving him, I let him go so that he could find, you know, someone else who was a better fit for him. Mm-hmm. It was hard, but it was honoring to both of us.
Yeah, and exactly. It's the idea of like leaving the other person better than you found them. Mm-hmm. You know, but yeah, that was the point that I was trying to get to, but my brain was not letting me, of like treating each other like brothers and sisters. And, you know, not so much like, for lack of a better phrase, as pieces of meat, you know, because that's where I think like the enemy and the spiritual warfare aspect kind of comes in a little bit. You know, when we get too caught up in all that stuff, like whether they don't meet our preferences, or we don't meet theirs, or whatever division thing you want to add in there, you know, it's like, again, we're better together. And like, if we're all supposed to be the body of Christ, like, how are we honoring each other instead of trying to tear each other down? So, but that's a soapbox that I won't get on. But thank you for sharing that, because like, I was reading that, I'm like, this is interesting, and I have no idea who this person is. So thank you for sharing who that is.
Yeah, of course. There's some controversy between the complementarian and egalitarian, if you follow those, you know, regarding how the meaning of marriage was working, and, you know, what Tim Keller wrote. So I won't get into that, but even beyond that, it's still good information.
Okay, interesting. Because I have deep dived into some of that stuff in the past, and I'm just like, yep, I still feel like this is a secondary issue and maybe not something we need to be battling about. You know, but again, I think it's still interesting to kind of hear both sides. Mm-hmm. Obviously I have my viewpoint, but you can never, I feel like we can never fully grasp our viewpoint until we have somebody challenge it, you know, because then that's where, you know, the growth really comes in. So yeah. I like how you said, so has knowing your love languages helped you in a relationship? Yes or no? How so? If they are, why not? But I liked how you were talking about that. You already know how to basically express your needs. So yeah, good for you. I don't know if you want to like expand on that at all or.
Well, you know, so I like the love languages. I like the simplicity of, you know, identifying ways that you can receive love. I think a lot of people get confused and think of it as ways that they give love. But from what I've heard and understand, you know, that if you want to give gifts as your love languages, then supposedly that actually means that you need to receive gifts. Like the love language is supposed to be what you need to receive to have your cup full. And, so I, as I've done, you know, counseling and heart work and, you know, introspection and whatever, I've quickly realized that my love languages are physical touch, quality time, and words of affirmation.
Me too.
And, you know, I think there's a combination of reasons as to why I think those things are the higher needs. But yeah, I think one important way for relationships to develop appropriate intimacy, not physical intimacy, but just, you know, closeness and knowing each other, because intimacy is basically, you know, becoming vulnerable before the other person. Mm-hmm. And so if you are knowledgeable enough about yourself to say, hey, I've had a really hard day. You know, one of my favorite things to do in relationship when it's possible is to come home and center myself with the other person. So essentially, like, we just meet and hug, and I let the rest of the day wash away and kind of just recenter my emotions and thoughts to the present moment. And it helps to do that in a hug with another person, you know? Mm-hmm. But I didn't realize that until recently. And so learning that about myself then helps me to express that to the person that I'm with and say, hey, this is, you know, the rest of your afternoon will be much better if you allow me to do this right now. You know, this is helping both of us.
Yep.
But to recognize when your triggers are, you know, if you're angry, you know, are you tired? Are you hungry? Are you, you know, stressed? And so again, like, what do you need in that moment? And because we are meant to serve each other, like, we are not in a relationship for self-gratification. We are in a relationship for serving others, and not to the point of being taken advantage of. This is not an abusive relationship, but, you know, again, it's a, Christ gave us the example of laying down his life for each other. And, you know, that's what Ephesians 5:21, I think, says, is, you know, mutually submitting to each other. And so how can the whole question should be, how can I help you? And how can you help me? And how can we? Mm-hmm. So if the person doesn't know, if they don't recognize what can help them in this moment, then it's a very one-sided thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that can cause like other issues, you know, of not being able to express what you need in that moment. You know, at least for me, in my experiences, when I'm asking somebody like, hey, what do you need in this situation? And they're like, I don't know. It's like the worst response ever. You know, because of who I am, I'm like, okay, I'm going to try and help you through all the things. And, you know, so obviously it's a little frustrating because I don't know what to do at that point, but it's also frustrating in the sense of like, well, why can't you figure it out? Like, why haven't you done the work to figure it out? You know, but again, I think you're right with the whole, like, coming together at the end of the day thing. That's something that a lot of married people have told me, that, like, you know, if I get married, the world doesn't end tomorrow, you know, and I get married, everybody is like, okay, that's one thing you need to do. You have to have that time to have a couple minutes when you first come together, you know, whatever time it is, to just breathe, you know, mm-hmm. and let everything else kind of go, because otherwise you're carrying in all that outward stuff. And that's just going to cause so much more, like, stress and, all that for your relationship. So I love that you said that. And I'm the same way. I just walk up to people and be like, hug me.
I mean, we want to show up as our best selves and we want to offer our best selves to the person that we love. And, you know, I get really frustrated when I see relationships where they're so comfortable with each other that they offer their worst selves to the person that they love the most, you know? And really, we should be offering our best selves to them if we truly say that we love them the most. And so again, checking our stressors at the door and just kind of trying to say, hey, you know, how can I navigate this best so that I can, you know, address my needs, but also show up as my best self for them, loving them in a way that they need to be loved. So it's a whole balance between, you know, it's always the internal fight between selfishness and self-gratification and serving.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Some days I'm like, I don't know how you did it, Jesus. I'm just going to throw that out there, but you're also God. So I guess that's how you did it. You know, but yeah, it's like that eternal battle will always be on that level of how can we be selfless and not selfish, you know? But yeah, like not living in the flesh, like you talked about earlier with the fruits of spirit, and how does that work into all relationships? Because I think that's everything, not just marriage, right. You know, because again, the body, like, how are we all working together? What spiritual gifts do we have? How does that complement the people that we're working with or, you know, in relationship with in whatever capacity? And which is another reason why I love love languages and, you know, being able to kind of figure that out and how can we use that tool to further the kingdom in another way? You know, how can we express love to these other people, especially in work environments, I feel like, you know, or in service, like in serving environments, like in ministry, you know, because those people aren't necessarily people you're going to see every day. You know, but I don't know where that rabbit hole tangent was going to go.
Well, you know, I think that singles are uniquely positioned to maybe recognize and try to meet other people's love languages in those other settings because we don't have someone in our life routinely meeting it. I mean, not to say that every spouse will meet every need all the time. Obviously, that's impossible. But the chances are greater that if you're married, your spouse is meeting some of your needs. Hopefully, that's, you know, the whole point of being together in partnership. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when we are single and we don't have that partner around, then I would hope, at least I feel like I am a little bit more in tune to, you know, try to give words of affirmation because I'm eager to receive it myself because nobody's speaking into my life. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, give that extra hug because, again, I'm deficient in hugs. Nobody's hugging me unless I'm around my nieces and nephews, you know? And so trying to give that to those in our workplace or our churches or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So cute little side story. So the other day after doing a way too many interviews in 1 week, I'll be honest, I was like feeling so drained. And I had my niece here and she was like, I want to play a game like every night because she was here for like a few days. And so after doing interviews, I wanted to make sure that I was still spending quality time with her because she's very much a quality time person. And we were in the middle of a game and I just like had my cards and I just set them down. And I was like, I can't. And she's like, you can't what anymore? Or you can't what? And I was like, I can't do it anymore. And she's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, I need something. Like, and I was like, I'm doing all these other things. I love spending time with you because quality time is also my thing too. I was like, but I just need a hug. And so she's like, okay. So she just come and like, she just jumped on me. Aww. And then we like laid there on the floor for probably like 10 minutes. And I was just like, okay, I feel better now.
It's true. I mean, it's so true. There's so many neurologic reasons why hugs are so important in physical touch.
Yeah. And it was just like the sweetest thing. She was like, okay, challenge accepted. She just like jumped on me and I was just like, okay, we can just lay here now for a little while. And then after that, I was like, okay, I feel better. Now let's keep playing our game. But it was just funny. You know, she's going to be 14 actually in 3 days. And so like with her, I felt like I could actually say that, you know, and she could understand. With like my younger nieces, I probably wouldn't have, I would have just kept pushing through, to be honest, you know, but I was just like, I need some love right now. Come hug me. But anyway, yeah, they're, you know, I'm all about the hugs, but they're, yeah. I don't know. It is hard when you don't get them enough. Ooh, let's talk effective communication. Because I love these kinds of questions and I'm huge on communication. So what does that look like to you?
Okay. So I find it really funny. I mean, maybe I'm not the typical girl. I don't know. But I find it really funny that guys have this stereotype that, you know, girls are so emotional and illogical and are not direct and aren't going to give, you know, direct answers as to what they want, you know, not tell them what they want. And I guess maybe, I don't know, some of that may be true some of the time, but I don't think you can make generalities like that. But both genders, both partners in the relationship, in order to have communication and know what somebody wants, you have to tell them, you know, and so there has to be enough trust in the relationship and enough willingness to be vulnerable that you can say what you're thinking, even if it might, you know, without the fear that even if it did hurt the other person, that they're not going to walk away and leave or cause some kind of, you know, harm to you or something because you've told them, you've given honesty. And so I think direct communication, honest communication, intentionally trying to work out understanding. You know, a lot of times I do think that men and women often speak different languages, even though they're saying the same thing. And so trying to understand what did you actually mean can be a fun game. And so actually one of the podcasts that I've listened to that you might enjoy is called Team Us by Ashley and Ted Slater. They're a married couple. I don't know how long they've been married, but their whole premise is that, you know, we're in this together. We are the team. And so if there's anything dividing us, we attack it together. And so how can we utilize this situation to bring us closer together rather than draw us further apart? Mm. And so communication, I think, is one of those things that if you allow it to, will put a wedge between you, or you can spend the time and intentionality to actually figure out what the other person is saying. And the other thing that I get frustrated by, and again, I don't want to generalize to all men, but I've heard it said something along the lines of listen to understand rather than listen to respond. And so if you're just listening to give a response and not understand, then your response is going to be superficial and not actually get to the heart of the matter. And again, the whole purpose of communicating something is you are sharing a part of yourself. And hopefully that's, you know, something that is either vulnerable or allowing somebody to know you more or, you know, move forward in the relationship. And so when I don't feel seen and known, then, you know, my confidence and worth is diminished. But when I feel seen and known in communication, I feel loved. And so trying to work, I mean, it takes hard work to get to a level of being able to communicate effectively with anybody, whether it's your boss or you're someone at church or a friend, you know, it doesn't have to be a partner, but making that intentional effort to say, you are worth my time to make sure that I understand what you're saying, that we have enough trust built up that if one of us says something that's slightly hurtful to the other, we still have good intentions. So like thinking the best about the other person and not assuming the worst, giving the benefit of the doubt. You know, I've been in relationships with friends where the benefit of the doubt is not given. And so that means that every single communication assumes the worst of me or the situation or whatever. And that's exhausting and it's not really life-giving. And so, you know, there's plenty of proverbs in the book of Proverbs, plenty of wisdom sayings that, you know, talk about how to interact with other people and what brings folly and what brings anger and what brings peace. And so the Bible is an excellent tool book to figure out how to effectively communicate.
Amen. I wholeheartedly agree. I keep telling everybody I'm an over-communicator. And a couple people are like, no, don't call it that, because there's no such thing as over-communication. It's just that's how you communicate, right? Like, you know, you put all the things out there and just hope that the other person's listening. And I was like, basically, yeah. You know, but like you bring up some great points, like with the what does that actually like look like, you know, and sound like versus just, oh, okay, yeah, that's great, you know, or whatever. And I know that there's a big debate among Christians right now that, you know, think that some therapy isn't like a good thing. And I'm over here like, yeah, I've been in therapy for a year and a half, and like it's the best year and a half I've ever had. You know, but my therapist is a Christian, and she calls me out like, you know, she's my best friend, even though we know that she's not. But it's great because, again, growth. But, you know, within therapy and due to my background, I have had to like go through these different trainings and stuff. And so one of the things is like the I feel statements or the I think statements. Right. I'm like, if we just use those more often.
Right. Because if you take responsibility for yourself, that's all you can do. I mean, you're establishing boundaries, but mm-hmm. you know, if there's an argument or whatever, or you are having a disagreement, you know, you should not accuse somebody, and you should statements, you know, yeah. But you can say what I feel and what I want to do. And the other thing that I didn't mention, but I, you know, we talked about before that I feel is super important is just looking people in the eyes when you're talking to them. You know, I've had some familial relationships where there's just a lot of distraction going on and there's other things, you know, taking their attention and dividing their attention. And so if I'm trying to have a conversation and they're not looking me in the eye, then I'm assuming they're not listening, because that's just, you know, normal human encounter behavior.
Yeah.
And so if you want to pay respect to the person, look them in the eyes mm-hmm. and talking to them.
Agreed. It is so funny because I'm the type of person that like when I'm thinking, I won't make direct eye contact, right? I'll just be like, oh, you know, or I'm trying to make up a point and like my thoughts are doing this, you know, all over the place. And so I will sometimes catch myself doing that where like when I am trying to understand somebody, I won't be making that eye contact. And it's something that I've had to work on, you know, in and of itself. And the same thing too, like if I'm sharing something that is uncomfortable, like still making that eye contact, because it lets them know this is serious and like, you know, not looking down or like feeling shameful or like whatever the situation may be, or the feeling that's presenting itself. You know, because I think there is something to the phrasing of, you know, the windows are the eye of the soul, you know, Yes. Eyes are the window to the soul. Wow. I said that totally backwards. I was like, that did not come out right. But again, like it's still a level of intimacy too. And like that connection. And I feel like if you're trying to effectively communicate, you need to have that level of intimacy, no matter who the person is.
And, you know, going back to your previous point of how are we choosing our mates? If people are looking for superficial things, they're not going to find out whether someone is an effective communicator or willing to take the time to develop intimacy with you in these vulnerable conversations until much later. Like, you shouldn't be having vulnerable conversations early on. And so people are potentially missing out on good matches or, you know, swiping too quickly with, again, just the superficial information on the profile. Mm-hmm. When really we need qualities. We need qualities that are intangible. And so mm-hmm. you can't see that on a profile.
Exactly. You really can't. And I'm the type of person personally that will get those hard conversations out of the way, you know, which my therapist is like, you should slow down a little bit. And I'm like, do I have to? But I mean, I understand why she's saying it, because she's just like, you don't want to be too vulnerable at the get-go, because sometimes I've used it as a defense mechanism. And so she's like, we're working on that. And I'm like, okay. But, you know, in and of that self, like, with effective communication and looking for those qualities that we obviously want, but still being open with, are these qualities we need? Because sometimes we don't know what we need, you know, and if we're in tune with the spirit, like we're going to start to understand those things that we do need, Instead of just looking at like, oh, hey, that guy's really attractive. And, you know, he's 6 foot tall and, you know, whatever, like he can
provide. Talk about that for a minute. Guys have such a wrong perspective that they are more visual than women. Women are totally visual creatures and women have passion too. So, you know, guys somehow think they own the market on passion and visuality, but it's not true.
Thank you for saying that, because I wholeheartedly agree. We may not be as visual as they are, but that doesn't negate that we are still visual. And it's still just as much, in certain cases, just as much of a thing on our side. But mm-hmm. I still think, again, that points back to, what are we putting stock in? Are we putting stock in this person's physical attributes that are going to change when he's 50, 60, 70? Or are we putting the stock in what his characteristics are like and like all that? So, yeah.
Well, you know, it's multifaceted, right? Like if I'm going to enjoy physical intimacy with my husband, I want to be physically attracted to him. Okay. But I also want to fully trust him to be a safe space for me emotionally and physically and mentally. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it is a both and situation where,
yeah,
if you know anything about female sexuality, there is a lot required to allow a woman to be relaxed enough to have physical intimacy with a man. So, you know, all of those intangibles plus the physical attraction. So mm-hmm. both and situation.
Yes, it is. I agree. I don't know if you've heard of and or read The Great Sex Rescue.
I have it and I have not read it yet, but it is on my bookshelf to read.
Okay, so I'm like halfway through it. Oh my goodness.
Right. So we can talk about purity culture if you want to, but we need to redeem sexuality for the church, and we need to redeem sexuality for a generation of people who were impacted by purity culture. And I'm very grateful that she wrote that book, and I look forward to reading it.
Yeah. Amen. Let's touch on purity culture, because that's a great segue. Because amen. Like I've been reading this and I'm just like, oh my gosh, to look at it from this perspective now, mm-hmm. At almost 34 years old and all of the things that have come out from it. And like the things that I'm still dealing with, like, you know, horrible body image, I can't touch a guy, like, you know, all these different things, right? You know, sex is bad, you know, all that stuff. And then now reading this book, I'm like, whoa, like to see it from that perspective. And then to kind of, in my opinion, I really think purity culture, while it may have started out good, ended up turning into a ploy of the enemy. We could touch on that if you want to. But like, again, looking at it now halfway through this book and just going, whoa, okay, this is really what God wanted. And while our parents, you know, in some cases and churches did the best that they could within that scenario, I agree. We really need to redeem this, because I think this is a huge reason why so many millennials are still single.
Yeah. And so, unfortunately, well, I'm grateful that you have access to this earlier, you know, as I'm 41, almost 42. And so I didn't have access to it in my 30s. And so I'm looking forward to reading it now. But I was probably at the beginning of purity culture, and then, you know, it continued on for much longer than it should have. But I agree with you. It seems like a unique time right now, although that's probably not the case. But I do fully believe that the enemy is trying to use whatever means possible to attack God's good design for marriage and sexuality. And so whether purity culture, you know, is being used as a tool in his tool belt for that, I mean, it definitely has impacted a generation of women and men. And I think a large number of us are single because of all of those teachings and inability to relate to people. But because sex and marriage is God's original design, I mean, he's the one that brought that into creation. Mm-hmm. We should reclaim it. You know, we should preach from the pulpit, not to idolize it, but to say, hey, this is how God intended relationships to be, you know, not prudish and you don't ever touch anybody, and not, you know, glorification of porn and all of the craziness that happens in the world, but the beautiful display of the intimacy that is between God and man displayed in human relationships. But again, so my soapbox is that the church church idolizes marriage so much to that degree that they forget that singleness also proclaims the gospel and the sufficiency of Christ as our husband and the eternal wedding, you know, that will take place. Mm-hmm. We get to display that while we are single. And then once we become married, we get to display, you know, the intimacy with the father relationship. So yeah, I'm all about healthy sexuality, healthy relationships, and trying to make sure that the church is balanced in their approach to both singles and marrieds.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know how that brings up a question, because I don't know how any of the churches that you've ever been involved with have dealt with this, but like my church has always been horrible as far as singles are concerned. So the question is like, what has that been like for you? Do you guys have like a young adult thing or like a group, or is that a thing now for your, wherever you're going to church? What does that look like?
I was in a youth group growing up, and then I guess in college there was more of a college ministry.
Okay.
Then as soon as I left college, it becomes this nebulous, you know, nobody can define it. Yeah. And so I was trying to think, because I moved around a bit in my 20s. So I was a part of two different churches in two different areas of town, but I preferred the smaller churches. I tried to be intentional about choosing a church that was focused on preaching the word of God and missions and, you know, making disciples, which should be every church theoretically, but unfortunately it's not. But I didn't go for the big mega churches that were just drawing people just to draw people. And so in doing that, in choosing smaller churches, there wasn't really a young adults ministry per se. So that may have been one of my, you know, short-sightedness is not intentionally finding a young adults ministry during that time. Mm. But I just wanted to be in community with other people who were, you know, and I have pros and cons about it, because I also feel like if we are a family in the body of Christ, like we shouldn't just, you know, segregate singles to one side and families to another side. It's healthy and beneficial for everybody to mix together. And so in the small groups and the Bible studies that I was in these churches, it was multi-generational and, you know, multi-life stage. Now, granted, I was usually one of the only few singles because most people were married by then. Mm-hmm. And that's the case now too. Like I said, I lived overseas. And then when I came back with reverse culture shock and everything, I wasn't interested in a huge church. So I again found smaller churches to be a part of. And I attend a smaller church now. So there's no organized young adults groups. So I haven't really had that. In other churches, you know, I can still go to activities at other churches, even if I'm not a member. But they tend to age you out at 35 these days, it seems like, and which is a little bit frustrating, because I feel like churches are not, they're not prepared for what is happening right now in society. Like we as a single group recognize that our demographic is growing, and that our demographic is growing because of divorces, because of deaths, you know, widowed and widowers, and because of prolonged singleness and never getting married. Mm-hmm. But it feels like the church is still doing the same old thing, you know, of assuming that after about age 30, you're going to be married. And so there's this gap between, say, 30 and 45, where they don't really have anything for singles because they assume that you're in a family structure. And so I think it's really short-sighted of the church, because singles is just going to continue to grow, you know, in demographic because of all these factors. And so they really need to make sure that everybody feels included and welcome.
Mm-hmm. Amen. That's something that I've kind of like, for lack of a better phrase, preached at my church for a while. You know, because I aged out of our young adults group three times. Because they kept raising the age, right? And here I am again, aging out, you know? And so it's like, okay. So it just kind of felt for me, just kind of felt like, okay, well now my worth really is just not great. Like each time, you know what I'm saying? Because like, oh, here I am. You're old. Like not old, but you know what I mean? Like,
right.
And it's just like, well, okay, what am I supposed to do if, you know, we don't have that community? I have a pretty decent community now, but I've prayed a lot about it and I've sought it out, you know, but it's not at my church. And so, you know, like that's why I've been trying to ask that question when it kind of comes up, because I'm just curious if it's like everybody or...
No, you know. It's a nationwide problem, if not worldwide, I don't know, but definitely nationwide.
Yeah.
You know, again, it goes back to tradition and idolizing marriage, when really, if sanctification and growth in Christlikeness is the goal, then it shouldn't matter whether we're married or single. And so if churches are trying to make disciples who follow hard after Jesus and are, you know, living life with an eternal perspective and doing, you know, whatever activities along the way God has called them to, then our social status as single or married shouldn't be the header as to how we enter the doors of the church. But it seems like it is still.
Yeah, I agree. And it's very unfortunate. Yeah, like growing up in the family that I was born into, they have... the older generation has always idolized marriage. And so I think that that's another thing that I'm personally dealing with is, you know, I don't fit into their preconceived conception of, you know, life and how it should be and, you know, whatever. And so as somebody who has a bachelor's and a master's degree, you know, but my worth to certain people in my family is like, oh, but you're still not married. You know, so it doesn't matter that you did these other things, like you still don't have a ring on your finger, you know, and I think that that's another ploy of the enemy to, you know, make me feel less than because I'm not married, because I have no idea if I'm ever really going to get married. We don't even know when the world is ending. you know,
it's okay. So it's a both end situation again. And again, I have lots of thoughts, but okay. It's almost a prosperity gospel situation where the church is saying, you know, you are going to get married, you're going to have a spouse, like if you, and that's what purity culture said too, like if you remain a virgin, you're going to have awesome sex with your husband, assuming, you know, meaning that you are going to have a husband, like it's an assumption. Right. And so people don't really know how to reframe the prosperity gospel message that you're going to get married into saying that it is still a good, viable, healthy, God-honoring option to not get married, whether that's our choice or just circumstantial because we, you know, haven't met someone. And so I think that one of the best ways, again, that we can proclaim the gospel to these people who idolize marriage is by thriving as a single and saying, I still have these desires. It is not wrong for me to have these desires. They are, you know, God intended us for community. He intended us for relationship. He himself is three in one and an intimate relationship. You know, it is perfectly fine for me to long after this. Mm-hmm. But in the waiting, you know, while I am not yet, I am still honoring him in my daily activities, choosing my time and my community, you know, based on healthy relationships. I am creating my own family. You know, I am creating my family with my church family, with my friends. Like they are just as much my family, according to the book of Acts, you know, we are all in this together. Mm-hmm. And so for people to kind of say that only the nuclear family is a viable family option, you know, it's just, it's not biblical and it's not what we're experiencing. And so when we can say, you know, I am content and desiring at the same time, I am trusting and longing at the same time, I am hoping and, you know, fulfilled at the same time, then that does blow people's minds because it's like they've never had to be in that situation before. So they don't know how to wrap their minds around it. And so being able to show them that there's life on the other side, like there's you know, you can be 45, 50, 65 and single and still be fine. You know, like you didn't crumble into pieces, you know, you're okay.
Yeah. Agreed. It's just a great point. I've been trying to work on that myself and just being like content in where I'm at and, you know, being able to still serve in whatever capacity, you know, and still represent. Yeah, basically like what you said, that like there's still life, like you can do these things and it doesn't have to be, you know, just because you're not married or you because you're married. And I think too, I don't know if you've ever heard this, but I think that sometimes when couples, because I know a lot of couples that will say this, oh, well, you should do this while you're still single. You know, it's kind of like that. I don't know. Like, I know that they're trying to have it be helpful, but it's like, that's still not helpful, you know, especially to somebody who wants or is longing for that. And so I don't know. I don't know why that just came out, but that thought pattern or that, not thought pattern, the
assumption.
Yes. Thank you. The assumption that, you know, I can only do these things because I'm single. They can't do them because they're married with kids. Like, okay.
I know families who've moved to Africa with kids, like anything can be done. I read about a family that's hiking, what, the Pacific Coast Trail or something with their three kids, mm-hmm. you know? So we're only limited by our imagination and, you know, what society, like what people think.
Mm-hmm.
There's no limitation.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like anything can be done, you know, within those aspects. And again, the point is to bring glory to God. Like if that's what you're doing, then who's to stop you? Like, why is that a thing to let other people's influence, I guess, and perception be the thing that stops you from doing whatever it is?
Well, I do have a thought based on what we were just saying, and I don't know whether this will come across in a way that's usable on the podcast or not, but
okay.
I'm about to get controversial here. I have found it challenging in my dating experience because, you know, what I was expressing before with trying to be content in singleness and living a fulfilled life, you know, with Christ as the center has required me to live as a single woman, which means just by practicality, I'm balancing my checkbook. I'm taking the car to the, you know, car dealership. I'm running all the errands. I'm working to pay the bills. I have my own health insurance, you know, and so you ask about provider and these other things. I think, I don't know if it's the way that the church has framed men's roles in relationship or the way that they've framed women's roles in relationship that's getting people mixed up. But I have found that a lot of men look at my single life and recognize that I'm capable of doing all of the things required to be done while I'm living a single life mm-hmm. and are either intimidated or not interested. I don't know, but they walk away because they're like, oh, you don't need a man. And it's like, well, what am I supposed to do? I have to live life as a single, you know, and thankfully God has given me capacity to do so. But, you know, I still want a man. So it's not that I need, you know, it's not need is such a, has too many, you know, whatever word connotations. Yeah. But relationship, there is still need there. There's still emotional need to be with a person. You know, the practicalities of how we divide up the budgeting and the dishes and the car and, you know, whatever else is just superficial stuff. But when they look at that and say, oh, you're too independent, you know, it's like, what do you expect? I live alone as a single woman while I'm waiting. Like, you should be proud that I am doing so well. I don't know what the appropriate response should be, but I'm curious if you've encountered that. And I feel like it's a struggle for those of us who've lived independent longer because men, again, I don't want to assign emotions or thoughts to them. I only know what they've shared with me, and that may not be what they're truly thinking, but they seem intimidated by someone who can have their life together as a single person. But then why would you want to marry somebody who doesn't have their life together? So it doesn't make sense.
Agreed. yeah, I've experienced that some. I currently do live with my parents, but that is only because California is way too expensive. You know, but I have had many guys tell me, oh, you're just too independent. You're too strong for me, you know, whatever. And I'm like, okay, well, that's how my dad raised me. So what do you want? You know, like, I don't know what to do with that. But, you know, and I was talking about this earlier in one of the interviews, like, I have had to learn in some scenarios to kind of, quote, let a man be a man. You know what I mean? Like, and allow them to kind of step in and help with certain things. But on the flip side, like, I get it where because I get frustrated too, where the frustration comes in with like, okay, I'm not going to talk to you because you don't need me. It's like that. I feel like that is, maybe it's an ego thing. If we want to get psychological and philosophical about it, you know, maybe it's connected to the fall and like Adam's curse, as far as like, he's going to till the land and, you know, it's going to be difficult for him. Like, maybe that's kind of where that need for him to feel needed comes in. You know what I'm saying? I don't know, because I'm not God. But just kind of throwing that perspective out there, maybe that's where it is for guys, as for us, where our desire is to be for our husband, right? And, you know, we want that love, they want the respect. You know what I'm saying? But again, I don't know if that is something that too much outward influence has happened on, and we're kind of losing the true biblical like principle of it, or what. So I don't know.
Well, you know, just to caution to any guys who are listening, I think that, I mean, I personally would love to have someone take some mental and physical load off, you know? And so it's not going to happen on the first date, obviously, unless my car breaks down and you can fix it. But as the relationship evolves and as trust is built and developed, you know, you have to provide opportunities, organic opportunities, for things to be present where it's like, oh yeah, please take care of that for me. Like, that would be amazing. I would love for you to do that. And I'm perfectly willing to say that and have that happen. But again, that requires a little bit of longevity in the relationship and some trust and understanding and knowledge between the people. So I feel like men are swiping and judging and writing off without allowing those organic situations to evolve. And, you know, again, giving people the benefit of the doubt that, yeah, hey, she might actually enjoy having someone help her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that points back to a question I meant to ask earlier, and then my brain went off on a whole thing. So, quick little thing. I was having a conversation with one of the other ladies, and the topic came up again, something around these themes. But I asked the question, I'm like, do you think we're ending talking stages too soon because of whatever reason? Like, they don't fit this one little non-negotiable, or, you know, they're not my preference in this, or distance, or, you know, insert thing here, right? Instead of really trying to figure out, hey, could this be somebody that I can live life with? And again, putting stock on like too much of the outward appearance of stuff. So yeah, I don't know if you...
Obviously, I'm still working on that balance because I'm still single, but... You know, for me, I'm trying to figure out what my non-negotiables are. And so if someone does not meet my non-negotiables and I find that out fairly quickly, then, you know, we end the talking stage. But then with other things, I'm also trying to become better at identifying lax boundaries and unhealthy interactions and critical nature and, you know, things that I would not want in a relationship. And some of that can come out fairly quickly, depending on the person. Mm-hmm. But if all of those things check out, I try to give them time, but then it's also the question of like, my time is precious. So how much time do I give them? Mm-hmm. So it becomes a balance of like, I have several friends who have been successful in dating and are, you know, getting married and have done the 3-date rule. So, you know, you give everybody 3 dates. But again, I think if you are wise in choosing the people that reach that stage, like there has to be some kind of early filtering. Then mm-hmm. once you get to the stage of the 3 dates, I try to allow that. But honestly, there's been some dates where I've been like, nope, it's got to go. Like, you know, it's been so bad. So it just depends on the situation. But yeah, I can see how potentially people are ending conversations too soon, because again, you don't know these intangible qualities until you have organic interaction, which honestly probably wouldn't even happen if you're only talking. Like, you have to go out and actually do an activity. So if we got off of our phones and actually looked people in the eyes and went and did something together, maybe we would identify some of these intangible qualities faster.
I'm going to just clap at that one. Agreed. Hey, thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the stories and the perspectives that were shared in this episode. Please share it with a friend whose dating life might need some help. Wink, wink. If you want to connect with me on social media, you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at @anapiffwithtiff. I really hope to see you there. There are multiple ways that you can support my show. You can pray for me, rate, review, and share any episode that you love. Or you can even financially contribute by going to patreon.com/anepiphanywithtiffany. Until next time, I'm Tiffany, and I hope you just had an epiphany.